Lying Awake stands in solidarity with the Black Lives Matter movement and its activists.
Intermittently throughout today's episode, we will be highlighting organizations that work to end police brutality and structural racism in the United States. We hope that this will provide resources for our listeners to learn more about what actions they can take to help make this world a more just, informed, and loving place.
We will not be doing our usual artist and production spotlights this episode to make room for these highlights. Please consider giving your time and resources to these organizations.
Hello, anyone and everyone, and welcome back to Lying Awake, a theater podcast. I'm Alex Price.
And I'm John Arlen Baines.
Today is an incredibly exciting episode because we have three guests with us who bring three very unique perspectives to the role that the actor plays in the U.S. theater community. We have an actor living in Florida who's just about to graduate college and begin a professional career. We have a rising Broadway star from Chicago living in New York City, and a well-decorated Chicago-based actress who has worked in many facets of this business for years. Let's wake up and meet them.
Stephen White is a senior at Bethel University studying theater performance, where he made waves as the Region 3 winner of the Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival, the Musical Theater Intensive. From that win, he was meant to travel to Washington, D.C. to compete in the national competition this month. However, that has been postponed for now. That win also brought him a scholarship to study at the Open Jar Institute in New York City this coming August, which, as far as we know, today will still be happening. He recently moved from his home in Illinois to Orlando, Florida, where he was accepted into the Disney College Program for Entertainment, where he will complete his degree remotely. Thank you so much for joining us, Stephen.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Kayla Davion is an actress from Chicago who has been seen on Broadway in the ensemble of Waitress, which she booked straight after graduating from Ball State University with her BFA in musical theater. She also understudied the role of Dawn and made history when she went on in March 2018 as the first Black woman to play Dawn on Broadway. She later joined the original Broadway cast of King Kong, once again in the ensemble, as well as understudying the lead role of Ann Darrow, for which she went on many times. And then, while still at King Kong, she booked the original Broadway cast of Tina, the Tina Turner musical, where she was seen as an Iquette, and again understudied the title role of Tina, for which she went on at many performances. She's also appeared on The Good Fight on CBS. She's a singular talent and a world-class friend. Please welcome Kayla Davion.
Yo, what's up?
Finally, we are very excited to have Heidi Kettenring on the show. Referred to by some as Chicago's favorite leading lady, Heidi Kettenring has been seen all across the Windy City in houses like the Chicago Shakespeare Theater, the Marriott Lincolnshire, Drury Lane Oakbrook, the Porchlight Theater, and many, many more, including over 1,000 performances as Nessa in Broadway and Chicago's Wicked. She's the recipient of 8 Jeff Award nominations and 1 Jeff win for her turn as Anna in The King and I at the Marriott, an After Dark Award for her Adelaide in Guys and Dolls at the Court Theater, the Sarah Siddons Leading Lady Award, the Richard M. Neeland Award, and 2 Broadway World Awards. She has toured as Belle in the national tour of Beauty and the Beast, can be heard on 2 Disney audiobooks, has appeared on NBC's Chicago Fire and ABC's Cupid, and has mounted 2 concerts at Actors Lounge Live in Chicago, featuring the music of Karen Carpenter. We're so glad to have you. Welcome, Heidi.
Oh, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
The first organization we want to highlight is the Black Visions Collective. The Black Visions Collective is a Black, trans, and queer-led organization that is committed to dismantling systems of oppression and violence and shifting the public narrative to create transformative, long-term change.
BBC believes in a future where all Black people have autonomy, safety is community-led, and we are in right relationships with our ecosystems. You can donate and learn more at blackvisionsmn.org and find them on Instagram with the handle at blackvisionscollective.
Yay! All right, let's dive in. We had our first set of guests on the show last episode, which was super cool. We had department chairs from Ball State and Bethel Universities, as well as artistic directors and founders of theater-making companies in Indiana and New York City. And one of the questions we asked them was, what does theater mean to you? And I love this question because everyone's answer is a little bit different and usually very personal. And we saw that really clearly last time when we had Mark Albin of Art4, who countered some of the more sentimental answers in the room by saying that to him, theater means business. And he was eager for more people to begin to adopt that narrative when speaking about the art form. So I think we're going to give all of our future guests the opportunity to speak to this question. So right out of the gate, let's start with Miss Kayla Davion. What does theater mean to you?
Wow, I would go first, huh? It's so crazy, especially in the time that we're in now. I think my definition of theater has changed so much. But primarily what theater means for me is seeing somebody who looks like me on stage. It's the reminder that we can tell stories too, that Black people can tell stories as well, that we can do anything that we want to and put our minds to it, and that we can put a piece on stage that means truth, it means honesty, and it means change. That you can walk into a theater, sit down, watch a Black person do their job, and walk out being changed. And for me, it's more than just a political viewpoint. It is finding the heart and the soul of imagination. And it's having the bravery on that stage to live in that truth, and to walk off of stage living that same truth. And I think our theater does exactly that. It allows you to be brave on stage and off stage. You're not living two different lives. And it's so interesting because I think that we talk a lot of the time about having a character. You're playing something else, but then you learn that the character is, it's a character, but it is also plus, it adds you. Yeah, and I love that. So for me, theater is just like another realm of being honest, true in the imagination, but also telling the story of the daily lives that we live now.
Beautifully said. Thank you for that.
Yeah. Stephen, you're next. What does theater mean to you?
Sweet. To me, theater is transparent. Theater is vulnerable. Theater is up to, it's one-on-one, it's close. It's something in which you can experience live and in the moment. And I appreciate theater for that being, because it's different every time. It's not something that stays the same. It's just, to me, it's a beautiful thing. And it gives me the opportunity to take on the role of something else or somebody else. But then as Kayla said, you can actually add on a piece of who you are. And that's beautiful, because I found myself in many different characters, and it's like, oh my goodness, like I didn't know that this was a part of me, but I found me while playing a specific character or while playing an imaginatory being. So like, I think that's the biggest thing for me. To me, theater is vulnerable. To me, theater is real. And to me, theater is live.
Wonderful. Oh, thank you. Heidi Kettenring, what does theater mean to you?
Oh gosh. You know, this is it's a very, full question for me. I sort of have two things that have popped into my head. One of them is, and it's so, it's been brought so much into my brain because during this quarantine and COVID and all of our theater shut down, because of in the last 10 years or so, we can stream everything. We can watch movies at home. There's so much television. There's so much access to something that we can watch solitary in our home. Theater is a place where people actively choose to be together and to have a collective shared experience. Even if their experience is different, they have chosen to go be with other people to watch a story that we are bringing to them. And there is something so powerful about that. It brings up a lot of stuff, you know, about where we are now with people streaming, wanting to stream, stock photos of stock videos of our stage things. And that's all wonderful to get it out there. But part of what makes theater is that it's alive and sentient in front of you, and that all of those people chose to do that together. Mm-hmm. And to that end, when I was a senior in college, our acting teacher pulled out a bunch of essays that she made us write our freshman year. And we all were like, oh God, oh no, what did we write? And the question was, what is theater to you? And I was actually really impressed with my answer, and it's still kind of how I feel about it. Long story short, when I was in high school, I was playing Anne Frank in The Diary of Anne Frank. And during rehearsal, a girl who was new to our school, who I just become friends with, who was doing props for the play, was killed in a car accident. And so I went to the acting teacher and I said, I don't want to do the play. I don't feel comfortable doing the play. It's a really dark time. I don't know that anybody's going to want to do that. And she said, I hear you, and we don't have to. We can cancel. But my hope is that you will understand that you know, she would want you to. She said all of the right things.
Sure.
And ultimately convinced me to do it. And we ran it for 3 weeks, and I got a letter in the mail to my house from a young man. I went to an all-girls school. He was from a different school. And in it, he said, I came to see your play against my better judgment. I was having a dark time. I have considered taking my own life several times. Your play gave me, watching those words and watching that story and listening to her talk about her sense of hope, has changed me. And I thank you for that. And that literally sort of began how, I'm getting choked up thinking about it. It began how I feel about what we do. Mm-hmm. That if I can touch one person by what I've chosen to be my chosen career and profession, if one, when people on stage are like, oh, this audience sucks, I'm like, if there's one person that was having a terrible day or their life is miserable and I was able to be any part of pulling them out of that, then I have done more than I ever anticipated that I could. So that's sort of a long answer to something that I feel really strongly about what we do. And it kind of harkens back to what we were talking about with your poem of, you know, theater and entertainment and when is it frivolous and when is it not. And that's a little spark in my heart when I ask that question.
Thank you very much for sharing that. Thank all three of you for your generous answers. That was Kayla Davion singing Last of Our Kind from King Kong on Broadway.
All right, moving forward. I always find it interesting to learn about how someone's journey led them to where they are now. You can read someone's bio and read about their credits, but there is nothing quite like hearing someone's story told in their own words. So let's start with Stephen. Stephen, you are from Peoria, Illinois. Can you tell us about how you got into theater and what led you to Bethel, and then what in turn shifted your focus to Florida?
Sweet. Okay. So my introduction into theater was like very, very weird because I grew up in church. So that was like my background. I sang in church and whatnot. And so like that's how people knew me. And that's how I was introduced to a lot of different avenues, whether it was me singing different places or just being known within the area. And so I was asked by this man, his name is Anthony Hendricks, and he was doing a production of Dreamgirls. The first thing that ever like opened my eyes to theater was the movie of Dreamgirls. Let me get that correct. The movie of Dreamgirls. I seen that on a Christmas. I saw it on Christmas, the opening night it came out, and it completely blew my mind because I had never seen a movie, a musical in which I saw nothing but people who looked like me. It literally opened up my eyes, and I was like, oh my God, like I was in tears, everything, because it was just like amazing to me. And so I remember like praying, and I was like, you know what, like, you know, God, I just hope one day I get the opportunity to like showcase my gifts. And literally that happened. My first introduction to theater was a man contacting me for a community production of Dreamgirls. And that's how I got my start into like loving theater, involving myself within it, and just being around creatives who were African American. And it was like, it was awesome. It was amazing. I dealt with a lot of adversity though, because I really wasn't, I jumped into something that I really didn't know how big and how important it was. And that was because of my own personal issues and the things that I went through in life, abandonment and things of that nature from my own personal family. And so I didn't know going into something how much of a commitment it was. And so that first introduction to me doing Dreamgirls was, like I said, a huge learning experience for me. But like I said, it opened up my eyes to see just something that was just worldwide, and I just wasn't aware of it going on. And like, I had heard about it, but no one in my family is like a part of the theater community. No one in my family really like sings like that unless it was at church. So once I actually got this opportunity to take part in something as Dreamgirls, like I definitely I put my whole self and my whole being into it. And then from there, it just literally opened up. I just started doing community theater all around my town. I'm from Peoria, Illinois. And that literally is how I began the theater process, or the theater, the introduction into getting into the theater world. And then I was introduced to Bethel just because I was just happening to like, I was like, yeah, you know what? There's a possibility I may want to just find a school randomly. And so I was online and I was looking up schools, and I just happened to find Bethel, and I just said, you know what, I'm going to apply. I had originally got accepted into an academy in New York, and it was called AMDA, but I just wasn't sure about going, and so I just put it to the side, to be honest, and I was just like, you know, if there's another opportunity that does happen to come up, I'm going to take it. And so Bethel, their application, or their acceptance letter came in the mail, and I was like, okay, cool, I think this might be it. And they ended up, you know, offering me more scholarship than the school in New York did. However, I was very upset, and I really wanted to go to New York, and I really wanted to just, you know, see my life opening up in the streets of Manhattan. But that wasn't meant to be. And yeah, I found Bethel, and it's been great ever since. And I've learned so much when it comes to my character, when it comes to me growing as an individual, when it comes to me being a professional in the industry. I've learned a lot. And so I think, yeah, that's about it. That's about it when it comes to me being introduced to the theater world and how I came to know myself at Bethel.
So you're headed to Open Jar Institute this August. Yes. Which is an actor training intensive program that provides select students with one-on-one training with some of Broadway's biggest stars and theater makers. So how excited are you? Do you know yet who you'll be working with? Do you know about what your days will look like once you're there? Tell us about it.
So far, the information that we've been given so far is a little broad. All we know is that it is supposed to be happening because it hasn't been canceled.
Yay.
But due to, you know, everything that is happening in our world, as far as who will be instructing us, what the week will consist of, I don't really know much information. However, I am very excited. I literally cannot wait for the opportunity because with Broadway being shut down at the moment, the week is also filled with seeing shows. So I don't know how that is going to change since Broadway is currently closed. But yeah, like I'm excited, and I hope that, you know, from what's happening now, that everything will still be a go. And I just can't wait to meet other people, other individuals who are talented, and just fill this weekend or this week with a lot of learning.
Yeah. Oh, that's so exciting. I will keep my fingers crossed for you.
Stephen's audition song for that program, I just have to talk about it. He sang When Words Fail from Dear Evan Hansen. And as soon as I heard him sing it, I was like, oh, he's going to win the musical theater intensive. Because it was like the best thing I've ever heard in my life. And then he won.
And I didn't think that I was going to win. I did not. That was literally a surprise. Like, you guys just saw me just sitting down, and like, they called the first person. And I thought that he had won. Like, I was saying, I'm like, okay, yeah, he definitely won. And then they called me up and told me that I was I didn't know the difference between recipient and then just like a nominee. Like, I'm a little slow. I didn't know the difference between the two. And so once he called my name, they were like, Stephen, that's you. That's you. And I'm like, so it was awesome though.
All right, Heidi, in my internet stalking of you yesterday, I learned that you're originally from a part of New Orleans, is that correct?
Yes.
Amazing. And then you headed to Nashville. When did that happen?
Yeah, I was born in Metairie, Louisiana, which is like 10 minutes out of the French Quarter. It's okay. Based in New Orleans. And we moved to Nashville when I was 2. I lived there until I went to college. Until I was 17. And then, my family was there, And when I, but when I was 24, my mom passed away, and my dad, my brother had moved back to New Orleans to go to college, and he stayed. Mm-hmm. And so my dad moved back to New Orleans. So he's now in New Orleans. So gotcha. Nashville is technically where I grew up. But I haven't been back to Nashville in a really, really long time.
Gotcha.
Although I miss it. I love it, but nobody's there.
I read an interview that you gave with Kelly Wallace at Stage and Candor, where you said that you didn't really get into the theater scene until after you graduated, when actually the interview said when you were about 24.
It was all very interesting. Like, I did theater in high school, and I actively loved it. I did my first play when I was in the fourth grade. It was written by the nuns at my school, actually. It was called Finding Tomorrow.
Yes. And
it was delightful. Oliver Twist and Little Orphan Annie meet and go on a journey, and they meet like Mary Poppins and Dorothy and sang Somewhere Over the Rainbow. But when I graduated high school, when I went to college, I actually didn't start as a theater major. I came up, that's how I ended up in Chicago. I went to Northwestern in Evanston. And I was a radio, TV, film major because my dad was in TV news. So that's sort of where I started, and about a month in was like, this is not for me. And I got into the theater program. But when I graduated college, and all through college, my confidence level was very low. I never had a full grasp of the confidence of what kind of an artist I wanted to be, or even what kind of an artist I was. Right. And I actually have a memory of standing in the Barber Theater at Northwestern and crying and thinking and saying goodbye, like being like, oh, well, this was lovely. I doubt that I'll ever be in as beautiful a theater as this. And I did a little bit of theater for those first 2 years. I was with a company called Healthworks Theater Ensemble that no longer exists, but...
You toured schools, correct?
We did. They began, I don't remember what year they began. Forgive me for that, but I, in 1995, was cast with them, and they started with a play called The Wizard of AIDS, and it was to bring HIV/AIDS awareness to schools all over, mostly all over the Illinois area, but wherever we could go. Mm-hmm. And they gradually added on violence prevention plays. It was a really wonderful little company, but it closed quite a few years ago now. And I sort of did that while I was trying to figure out who I was and what I wanted to do.
Yeah.
And it was when I was 23. I was 23 because my mom passed when I was 24. A friend of mine called me and he was like, you're miserable. I'm going to audition at the Wagon Wheel Theater in Warsaw, Indiana.
Hey,
Indiana. And I was like, well, why not? You know, I hated my apartment. My life was just in flux.
Yeah.
But I went to this audition. I got cast. I went. It was absolutely amazing, and a lot of Chicago theater actors were there. Mm-hmm. It was a non-union company. They're still there. Wagon Wheel is amazing. And a friend of mine who I met there was like, they're doing a show at the Drury Lane Oak Brook called Follies. They need lots of non-union, you know, just go and audition. What do you have to lose?
Yeah.
So I did, and I got cast, and I mean, literally everything changed right there. I met the man who is now my husband.
Oh, wow.
This was in 1998. So we've known each other now for 22 years. The director of that, we hit it off so well. He said, can I give you your equity card to do a kid show at our theater, to do a TYA contract? I was like, sure.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really know what that meant, but it, all of a sudden, like this thing that I knew that I loved, but I think that I was just, I don't really know what I was afraid of, but I was afraid of it. All of the pieces fell into place. Mm-hmm. A lot of it is that I do this a lot on every element of my life, but I asked constant questions of like, what would this mean for me? You know, what do you think? And I asked the right questions of the right people, but yeah, it was, I didn't work in a professional theater until I was 23, 24. Yeah.
That's a good friend. May we all have a friend that will call us out when we're miserable.
Oh, kidding. I am so grateful for that phone call. I remember exactly where I was sitting in my haunted house. I was sitting on this couch and the phone rang and it was Kevin Feeney, and he was like, you are just miserable and you're driving all crazy. come to this audition. Okay, I'm not going to go.
And then, the ghost wouldn't give you a break.
The ghost was like, get out.
The ghost was like, you're miserable, girl. Come on,
you bring exactly. us down.
Oh my God, somebody else move in, please.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing all of that. Still laughing at the ghosts. So Kayla, you're originally from Chicago. Are you back home with your family now during the shutdown, or did you stay in New York City?
Oh no, I'm paying rent. I'm riding this good old New York City. New York is not cheap, and so I will be here getting my money's worth. Do you understand?
Yes.
I am gonna go home and visit though soon, but I'll be here for the most part.
That's awesome. Yeah, I bet there's really no like subleasing happening right now, right?
And no, but shockingly, so many people because of this quarantine, there's just people moving like day by day. Like every day, you see somebody else with a moving truck. Yeah. Getting the phone out of here. Yeah. Wow. It's actually really crazy.
So to kind of transition into a little bit into your performing career. So you booked your first Broadway job straight out of college. Before that, you had to choose a college to go to. And I'm sure with someone with the amount of talent that you have, you probably had a lot of options. So what made you choose Ball State?
I did not have a lot of options. That is the crazy part about it. I went, crazy story. So very much like Steven, I was raised in the church. My dad's a pastor. So I grew up singing. That was my gig. That was my thing. I didn't know anything about theater. I also, to be honest with you, didn't care because I was like in my own world and I was very much of like a tomboy. I loved sports. Like I was on a step team in high school. Like that was my life. Like I was like, yes, I got it. And I was really into psychology. So I was like, I'm going to go to college for psychology because, you know, I was like, I can picture myself in a chair giving advice to somebody and letting them know what's up. You know? That was my plan. I was like, I'm going to tell you the truth, you know? So I ended up my senior year of high school, my sister was in a theater class and the theater teacher knew about me because I did choir on the side. So I still was singing. And he asked me to audition for this show called Memphis. And I was like, okay, no, thank you. And he was like, no, I really think that you should audition. This is for this Allstate Theater Festival. And I was like, I don't know what that is. Thank you so much. No, thanks. And he's like, no. Like audition for the show. Just look up the show, audition for it. And I was like, okay, fine. And when I did that show, I got in, I ended up auditioning and I did it. And I met all of these kids from all over the state, which was incredible to me. I was like, I've never seen or heard of any of this in my life. And to be able to put on a production and like understand what an ensemble is, was like, it was like a full light bulb for me. So I was like, this is what I need to be doing, Mom. And she was like, no. And then I was like, no, Mom, seriously, like, I really think this is what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, something went off. And she was like, okay, well, then look up the colleges. If you're going to do it, you need to actually do it. So I was like, okay. Got on Google and researched the top 10 schools for musical theater because that's how clueless I was. I was just like, what's up here? You know, and of course, a lot of stuff in New York popped up. And randomly, Ball State, their package about their school came in the mail one day. And I looked down at the package and I kid you not, everything in my body and something in my heart was like, this is where you're supposed to go.
Wow.
And I was like, okay, this is where I'm supposed to go. And that's literally what happened. And then I literally told my mom, my entire life has been literally a blessing. Like, it's been like, you're on a path for a specific reason. And I've been like, I'm just going to follow that path and do the work that it takes to be on this path. Mm-hmm. So I told my mom, I was like, yeah, we need to do that. And then that's what I did. And I auditioned for Ball State. And then, yeah. And then I got to school that first day with some pink capris when you're supposed to be wearing black for your acting classes. And I had class ready, you know, ready, but also not ready, just not prepared at all. And then I had to work my way up from the bottom to the top. And I remember crying to my mom being like, I have no clue what I'm doing here, Mom. Like, I don't know anything. I was like, sis, I'm over here embarrassing myself in these classes. Like, this makes no sense. And she was like, Kayla, like, if you want to be there, if you want to do it, you have to do the work and you have to do it. And I was like, okay. And then I remember us praying that I would book a Broadway show before I graduated college. And that's literally 3 days before I graduated college, booked a Broadway show. So, like,
no, it was 3 days.
It was 3 days. It was on a Wednesday.
Wow. Yeah. Wow. I love to hear about your mom. I read in your Indigo interview that you said, all right, picture the way that I sing and now picture 10 times better. And that's my mom.
That's my mama. Picture, you hear me sing and you think that's good? Like, just think. My mom is like, what? Mind blowing. I'm just like, girl, get out of my face. Stop singing to me like that. Get away from me.
Has your mom ever been like, hey, can you give me an audition?
My mom has asked me to help her like sing certain things. And I'm always like, what? I'm always like, no, what, how, why? Like, you know, but she doesn't have training. So hers is like fully natural. Yeah. And now I finally do have training. So it is really cool to like, for her to ask me like to help her and to like get into that world of like, how do you help your mom without making her mad? Like, you know, without offending her, you know? Love you, mama. But yeah.
That's awesome. So speaking of booking a Broadway show before you graduate, can you talk a little bit about the actual logistics of your life around that time when you were auditioning for Waitress? How did that happen? What was the process like and how sure were you that you were going to get this job?
Oh man. So we did a showcase. We did a theater showcase. For those of you who don't know what that is, sometimes most of the colleges you go to for performing arts, not all of them, but some of them have showcases that they do toward the end of the school year where you go and you perform like a scene or a song, depending on what your major is. And they invite casting directors, they invite agencies to come and watch you to hopefully that you will book an agency. It doesn't always happen like that and you can persevere without that. But anyway, so we did a showcase and I met my now agency there. I had a couple of meetings with different agencies, but there was one particular agency called Nicolosi & Company who I was like, these are my people. Like, I can be real with them. I can talk real with them and they understand me and they're okay. Mm-hmm. And they're not fearful. So this is great. And they ended up making me go to a lot of different auditions. I was in for The Color Purple. I was in for Lion King, which Lion King was the one that I thought that I was going to be in. That was the show that I was going to be in. And Waitress ended up being a last minute audition right before I was leaving the city after the showcase, because I did the showcase in New York City. Mm-hmm. And they were like, go see the show, go to this audition. And I was like, okay. And so I paid one of those like $30 rush tickets. I watched the show. I was like, wow. And I got to see Sarah Bareilles on stage in the show. And I was like, wow, this is incredible. Like, who knew? Because I did not know what Waitress was. I was like, okay. and I was like, this is incredible. And so I went in and I auditioned. And then I left. I went back to school because we had our final week was coming up. And so I was like, great, great, great. And my agency called me and they were like, hey, they want to know, first of all, they want you to come in for a callback and it's going to have a dancer call and you're going to probably sing and do the scenes. And I was like, okay. And they were like, they want to know if you book the role, would you be willing to start the next day? Which means I would have to leave school. And I told them no. And they were like, what do you mean? No. This is a lifetime. And I remember my agent being like, you know, I think you might want to reconsider. And I said, no. I can't do that. I was like, it's very important for me to get this degree. I'm going to be like one of the first people in my family to graduate college. Like, my education is important to me, so I can't do it. I'm so sorry. And so from there I was like, I'm not getting this role. And they were like, well, just go to the callback anyway. So I had to fly back to New York. So I went to New York on Tuesday at like, I think I flew out at like 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. And mind you, this is finals week, so we have tests and stuff. So I flew in, took a bus from the airport to the audition, did the audition in my head. And then I called my mom got on the bus right after the audition finished to go back to the airport to get on the plane to go back to school. And I told my mom, she was like, so how are you feeling? I was like, I'm not about to book this role, Mom. I already told them I'm not coming in if I do book it. I was like, so there's just no way. And then I got home. I studied for my next final. I was like, I am exhausted. And then literally Wednesday, the next day, it was the next day, I was taking a final in the library, and the agency kept calling my phone, and I kept hitting ignore because I was like, how dare you call me right now? You know? And I remember calling them back, and I was like, hello, you called me? I'm taking finals. I'm in school. What do you need? You know? Just not nice either. Just mean. Because I was just frustrated and tired. Y'all was tired. I was like, what do you need? You rang? You know? And they were like, hey, we got you on speaker. I was like, hey, how y'all doing? What's up? You know? I got another final soon. And then that's when they told me I booked Waitress. So, and I was like, crying, you know? But did not think I was going to book it. And then they told me I booked, and they were like, and we're willing to wait until you graduate. So then I graduated college and then started the next week. And I said, and when you stand firm on your beliefs, things will happen. Boom, bada, bam. You know, what's for you is for you, period. Because there were many other people in the room who were from New York. And I was like, and you chose me. Thank you so much.
Wow. That's wild.
I only knew real super vague details of that. So thank you so much for sharing that.
I'm just trying to think of that flight and then like an audition and then flying back. And
oh my God. Focus on academics.
Yeah. Now you see why I was mad. I was like, I'm tired. Don't call my phone. I'm tired. And I need to get an A on this final, please. Okay.
Did you get the A?
Mm-hmm, I got the A.
Of course you did. Of course you did.
It might have been a B. It might have been a B. I'm not going to lie to you.
The second organization we'd like to highlight is Campaign Zero. Campaign Zero seeks to interact with policymakers at every level of government to hold them accountable and provide them with research-based solutions to the national problem of police violence.
You can donate and learn more at joincampaignzero.org and on Instagram at the handle @campaignzero.
That is why all the girls in town follow you.
That was Heidi Kettenring, and We've Only Just Begun. Heidi Kettenring sings Karen Carpenter at Artist Lounge Live in Chicago, March 2019.
I want to talk about heroes and role models. I look at and listen to the three of you and see very successful and driven people. And that doesn't happen by accident. I believe that our successes of any size are refractions of light that we took in from others and then bent back out into the world. So I'd love to hear about the people in your lives that shine some light on your path and made you want to be the person and artist that you are today. Heidi, I'm certain that I've told you this story before, but for our listeners, I saw you in Wicked in 2008. Dee Rossiali was playing Elphaba at the time. And I had never seen, much like what Kaylin Steven said, I had no awareness of theater, especially in a professional sense, until later in high school. I had never seen a professional show. And of course, by the end of Act One, I'm crying. And by the end of the show, and pretty much every moment since, there's nothing else that I've wanted to do with my life. So it was a very seminal, like, moment for me. And then I met you doing a reading of Stephen Karen Mulder's musical, Buried in Prosperity, at their house in Chicago, with a lot of really awesome people, including Kayla and I's friend Kirsten Hodgins. She was there. And you told me you liked my necklace, and I panicked and went for Stephen Karen's wine. but it was an out-of-body experience. I just never thought that I'd be in the same room, you know, with you. So, yeah, you were thoughtful and generous with your work and your spirit. And even though I was nervous and tipsy, I took several leaves out of your book by then. So, thank you.
You're very welcome.
I know
I'm,
from
it. I'm honored, and now you've made me nervous, and I'm delighted.
I'm nervous, too. It's great. Sweaty palms. I know from interviews that one of your theater heroes is actor Susan Moniz.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about what about her and her work that shines light for you?
Susan, oh God, what's so amazing about Susan, I remember the first time I saw her on stage, I remember the first time that I met her, and I'm going to bookend that with, begin with, she has become one of my very best friends. And it's like,
wow.
But it still hasn't lessened all of those It hasn't lessened all of those things, but to me, it's a perfect, per actually even what you just said, that like, I still remember that person that looked at her and was like, I can't do what you do. I can't imagine the life that you had. And so when I meet younger people who I know are having a similar moment to that, it is humbling, and it is, it sort of brings it full circle. Cause I remember I was in college, I was at Northwestern, and still thinking, I wasn't thinking this isn't what I want to do. I think it just was like, I can't imagine ever having this life. I just can't imagine it. And there was a musical at the Marriott Lincolnshire called The Hot Mikado, which is David Bell wrote it, and it's a really fun jazzy musical version of The Mikado, the operetta. And Susan played Yum Yum. And I had a couple of friends in it, so I went to see it. So first of all, here I am at this amazing theater in the suburbs of Chicago doing this incredible show. And this woman comes out on stage and she starts to sing. And I still feel this way. The voice that came out of this human was unbelievable. I just couldn't believe it without effort. I mean, Susan is like 5 feet tall. She can't weigh 95 pounds soaking wet. She's just this petite powerhouse, and just this voice came out of her, and I was enthralled. And then like a year or two later, I was working at sadly no longer with us candy store called Jones Sweet Shop in Evanston, Illinois, with my dear friend Kate Baldwin. And she brought in a CD called The Second City Divas. And it was a bunch of Chicago leading ladies. Mm. And Susan Moniz was on it singing Since I Don't Have You, which was like a song from the 50s that they ended up putting in the Broadway revival of Grease. And she had done the Broadway revival of Grease with, his last name begins with a Z. I can't believe it. I can't remember. But in any event, I mean, it was like, I was like, no, I have never heard anybody sing like this before. It just got better and better and better. And then my roommate, Kevin, the one who was like, you're miserable, you need to get your life in check. Mm-hmm. He was doing Seven Brides for Seven Brothers out at the Drury Lane Oak Brook. I think I was still in college, maybe just out of college. And Susan Moniz was playing Millie. And afterwards, we all went to a bar in Chicago called Tunes. And Susan Moniz walked in. And I lost my mind. Totally lost my mind. And Kevin knew I was going to lose my mind. And he brings her over to me. And I was like, And cut to, as I started my career, she sort of lived the life that I wanted. I've always wanted to do this for my living, but I never was like, I've never moved to New York. It wasn't because, I don't think I'll make it. I just never did. I love Chicago. I knew that the Chicago theater community is so wonderful and so full of amazing people that's what was for me. And what I wanted was just to make a living being a performer. All of the extras would have been extra, but like my goal was, if I can do this and not have to do anything else, then that is what that is the goal. To say I am an actor, like I'm shaking. That is my job. When people ask me, what do you do for my job? I am an actor. And Susan, she was married. She had kids. She had a backyard. She all of these things that I was like, she had hobbies. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Yeah.
And it was her and also Paula Scrofano and John Rieger, who are two actors in town who are married. Similarly, they were the people that I went to with questions of how are you able to just make it, make a living, do it? Mm-hmm. What are all of the circuits here in Chicago that I need to know? And if the theater work isn't happening, what do I do? And Susan was just immediately down to earth and kind and like all of these things that when you first meet your the people that you idolize. And I think there is an expectation that they're going to be larger than life and that they might not have time for you and that they'll go, oh, thank you so much. And oh, sweet you are. And then they'll walk away. That moment when you realize that they're human. And I mean, I don't like that, that saying, don't meet your heroes, because like, I feel the opposite. Meet your heroes, because 9 times out of 10, they are everything you want them to be and more. And Susan was that. I mean, truly, that day, even in the bar, she was like, oh, what's your name? Oh, you're Kevin's roommate. Oh, he's amazing. You must be amazing because he's amazing. And the fact that she's my buddy and like getting to, we did Julie Jordan and Carrie Kipperidge together, and to get to sit across from that face while she sang at me. Oh, my God. It was just like, I mean, at that point, I was like 28, 29. I was like, Susan Moniz is singing to me. How did I end up here? I still feel that way.
Wow, that's awesome.
That's so cool. My brain is melting.
Yeah, that's so cool. Steven, who are some of your role models and why?
Mine really hit home, to be honest with you. I'm with this, you know, the saying that it says it takes a village to raise a child. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like mine really hit home. I'm grateful for the people within my hometown that support me, rather it be my mother, people from my church. I look at them as people who've pushed me to go after my dreams, whether it be through financial support, whether it be through encouragement, just to tell me to go after that audition, whether you feel as if you're qualified or not. Like, we are here to support you. And a lot of people say, you know, they don't get that much support from their hometown. And I can't really say that for me. Like, I feel like there are a lot of people who want to see me be successful. And I was I was on Facebook Live the other day talking to friends and just people in regards to like those who want to pursue their dreams. And I say, I look at my life in this sense, like imagine yourself as this ray of light. And every time someone encourages you, they have a ray of light within their hand that they are throwing at you. And under this ray of light is your true self, the self that you want to be, the self that you're striving to be, the self that, like, and for me, I would say, like, that's just me on Broadway one day, or that's me behind a camera one day, living out my best dreams, whether it be through singing or acting, dancing, whatever it may be. But every time someone encourages me and lets me know that you're awesome, or I see that you're going to be famous one day, or I see great things ahead of you, like you're causing this light that is surrounding me to get bigger and bigger and bigger until one day it explodes. And then I myself can look in the mirror and say, or I myself can look in the mirror and see this individual that people are talking about. Because it's so easy for you to hear things from people telling you, oh, you're going to be great, or you're talented, you're a great person, but it's harder when you look in the mirror and you don't see that yet. And so, like, whenever I go to auditions and stuff, like, I'm literally blown away. And I don't want people to think that it's fake or that it's not, it's me not being humble, but I mean, it's me being, like, it's a fake humility, but, like, it's real for me because there are definitely times where I don't see it. So, like, it's great to have a family and a support system for my grandparents. Like I said, people at my church, my mother, support me and just show me that this is possible if I put my mind to it. And then I'm also just seeing the evidence from certain things and just pushing myself out. So that would be the first, those that I look up to that are already in the business. One of my biggest people that I really do admire would have to be Joshua Henry. I love what he is doing, how he is literally breaking, like, he's doing some amazing things within the industry. His spirit is awesome. I've seen him in Carousel, I've seen him in Hamilton. Mm-hmm. I actually sung a song from him in Violet the Musical on my Instagram, and he commented on it, and he was like, nice vocals, my guy. And I was like, oh my God, yes. Joshua Henry is telling me that my vocals are good. So, like, that's another ray of light that's being thrown to this, to me, so that I can, like I said, one day, or, you know, get to that point where I can look in the mirror and be like, oh my goodness, like, I've been this entire time and I couldn't see it, but so many other people saw it within me. And so that's probably the most that I can think of at this moment. I love Joshua Henry. And then also when I just see people in shows. Like, I've seen The Color Purple. I've seen Hamilton on Broadway. I've seen Once on This Island on Broadway. I've seen King Kong on Broadway. And I saw Kayla, and she was absolutely amazing. I've seen, what else have I seen? I've seen Lion King on Broadway. So, like, me going to see these things and seeing people who look like me, and even also seeing people who don't look like me, like, to see a wide range of diversity and people just coming together to complete one specific task, and that is to entertain and to tell a story, like, that blows my mind. And so I can't wait for the opportunities ahead of me in my life in which I am able to be a part of that group and a part of that number to tell stories and to showcase who I am on a bigger scale.
Beautifully said. Gave me goosebumps.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Thanks for that, Stephen. Okay. Kayla. So we talked already briefly about your mom. Who else in your life do you want to mention and lift up that really shines light on your journey?
First of all, it's so interesting. I feel like not that it keeps changing, but I feel like it keeps adding on. And I'm finding people that are now closer to my age that make me want to be so much greater. And I'm looking around and I'm like, wow, you inspire me every day. So first, before I mention that person, I want to say Heather Headley makes my soul just elevate to a new level. And every time I see her perform, I'm always like, well, first of all, this was always like via the screen, via like watching the screen somewhere. But I think when somebody can transform you through song or through their piece, even through a screen, I'm like, you have something that is so captivating about you. And I'm not sure what it is, but your soul shines, right? And then I got to meet her in person because I got to open up for her for this cabaret in the summertime. And meeting her, I was like, it all clicked. I was like, you are angelic. Like, and you are trying to be no one but yourself. And I was like, within this realm of like growing up and learning your identity, it's something that's so important for me to see because I'm only in my 20s. Like, I'm just like, I need to be like, I need any pillar that I can that's going to be like, be yourself, stay in yourself, stay in your truth. And then I watched her perform and she came out there and it was breathtaking, y'all. Mm-hmm. All she did was walk out there and just look at you and you would be like, wow, you see me. Like, you really see me. But it's that transformative. And she's like, and this was so funny to me, she did no up tempos. She did all ballads. And when I say everyone was still hooked from the beginning to the end and all she did was ballads, she's telling a story. Do you hear me? I was like, this is unreal. I've never seen somebody, because you know, after a while, ballads, you get a little tired.
Sure.
You were not tired. You were energized because she was truly giving you her soul. Mm-hmm. And she was like, I'm not going to give you what you think the song is going to sound like. I'm going to sing it in the way that it comes from me, in the way that I'm feeling it. And I was like, girl, tell the story to us, please. So I definitely have to mention her because she is admiration. She inspires me so much just with her authenticity. And her becomingness of just living in her truth. I just love it so much.
Yeah.
And then I also want to highlight one of my good friends who is a sister to me now, who I met during Tina. Her name is Destiny McGinnis. And she is revolutionary. She is the epitome of like researching, doing the work, finding the truth, finding the light, being joyful. I think sometimes it even scares you how joyful she can be. But I'm like, to wake up and to have that joy every day, to wake up and be like, I'm alive. I'm so grateful for that. So I'm going to make sure that this day is all about me being alive and the specificity of the things that I can find that breathe life into me is amazing to me. And then she's crazy. Like, the way that she is on stage is like,
She is legit one of the best actresses I've ever met in my life. And she is an icat. She doesn't have one of the lead roles. And she, the way she lives on that stage in her truth of the character, it is like mind-blowing to me. And if she's, when she's in, there's no taking her out. Yeah. And you're like, wow, you're amazing to watch. And she does, and she does the work. She researches. She like knows anything and everything about Tina if you want to ask her about it. Like she, and I'm just like, you're an inspiration. I tell her this all the time, but I don't even think she understands me. So I hope she, I hope she really listens to this and gets the picture that I am like so inspired by her. I really am. Yeah. So I definitely have to highlight her. That's my girl.
Wow.
Ugh. Can I just really fast? I have to tell you this. I went to college with Heather.
Ah.
She was a freshman when I was a junior, and there's a show at Northwestern called The WAMU Show, and it's been around since Northwestern was around, and in any event, it's like student-written sketches and songs and stuff, and I was a junior, but it was my first time doing WAMU, and Heather walks in. She has been that since she was 17 years old. Crazy. In walks this girl from South Bend, Indiana. And she sang this song. I still remember the song. It was called Laugh So Hard. The world needs a laugh. It was this awesome song. And she just stood there. And every now and then she would do this thing with her hand. And there was like a row of us. We were like, who is she? Who is this woman? And then we got to know her. And she's just the coolest, kindest, easygoing. But I mean, you're not kidding. I mean, she walked in. Sure, we already had started, but we still were like, oh, who's this girl? And she started singing that song, and we were like, she's a freshman? She got a solo in the WAMU show?
And then you're like, oh.
So yeah, when I piggyback on, yes, Heather Headley, yes.
When I seen her in The Color Purple, I didn't know anything about Aida. I had no idea who Heather Headley was. That's just because I had no idea of theater back then. And so when I seen her in The Color Purple, I said, who is this Suge Avery? who is this woman? She was so classy and elegant, and everything about her it was beautiful. Like she, like there's a ray of sunshine just all over her, and yeah. I love her. I love her.
Wonderful. Thank you all for that. Just one little follow up for you, Kayla. You're at a place in your career now where I imagine people are beginning to approach you and to say that they look up to you and you inspire them and are a role model for them in the industry. Is that correct?
Yeah.
What has that been like? What is that like?
It's making me want to cry. I just am floored. I am like, me? You know? I cry every time. I cry every time. Anytime somebody comes up to me or sends me a message, I cry every time because I am just so wowed. And not that I don't see anything in myself like I do, but it's not to prove anything. It's not to forcefully do it. I just want to shed light, and I want to be a positive voice for people, and I want to encourage people, and I want people to know that you have somebody in your corner at all times, even when you feel like you don't. And so when people feel that, I am just in awe, and I am reminded that I'm doing the work that I'm supposed to be doing. I keep telling my friends this. I don't care about the amount of success I reach. That's not my purpose in life. I could care less if I left this world with a lead role or not. It's not who I am. It's not why I got into theater. I got into theater because of how it made me feel and the light that it pushed from my heart to my head that was like, this is where you're supposed to be. And I'm like, and I told my friend this one day, I said, the moment that I lose that is when I know that this is no longer for me. Mm. And that's what I want to hold on to, which is why I'm always like, if you need to talk to me, message me. You need a prayer, call me. Like, you know, like I want to continue to be that person for as long as I live. And I don't want to let that go. So when they come to me and say that, I'm like, great. Thank you, God. I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm so happy you see that. And I will continue to be that for you as long as I can be.
And you're an encouragement. You're an encouragement to our brown brothers and sisters who look at this thing called fine arts and theater. And we see in our high schools that they are hardly ever funded. I went to a performing arts high school and a performing arts middle school. However, my experience there was far from what I thought performing arts was. It just didn't really give me what I saw on TV or what I saw on stage. And so when I see someone, of course, who looks like me, and I see them succeeding and like going after whatever it is that they want in life, it's definitely an encouragement that I can get there too. No matter what roadblocks I may find myself facing, it's like, oh my goodness, she worked hard to get to where she was. So there should never be a moment in my life where I can say, oh, I don't think that that's possible for me, because there's someone up there that's doing it. And so I applaud you and I thank you so much for what you're doing. And yeah.
Look, about to cry already. Thank you so much. Thank you. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm going to cry as shit.
No one can really see, because I'm learned to slam on the grave before I even turn.
That was Stephen White's winning performance of Words Fail from Dear Evan Hansen at Kennedy Center American College Theater Festival Region 3 Musical Theater Intensive.
I have one more thing I want to do before we say goodbye. Have you ever heard of the game Rose and Thorn?
No.
Yep. Okay, good. Well, it's basically a tool for reflection. You can do it at the end of your day or at the end of your week by yourself or with your loved ones. And you look back on your day and you think, okay, what was a rose in my day? Something lovely, something that touched me. What was a thorn in my day? Something maybe unexpected, something maybe painful. And then I added the bud portion as a hope for the future. And I think this is important because depending on who you ask, any one of you right now is already, you know, living the dream. Heidi, the sheer variety and volume of your career is the stuff of dreams. Caleb, you're a shooting star. Stephen, if I had met you when I was 14, I would have started to do everything I could to be in your shoes by the time I was your age. So it's tempting to ask, well, what more are they hoping for? But I want to give you a space to speak your hopes out loud because I know they're there. And actually, I want to hear from Alex on this one. And it will give our guests a little time to think of their answers. So Alex, let's put you on the spot first. What's a rose, a thorn, and a bud for your career so far? Oh yeah, I didn't mention. This isn't for your day. This is for your entire career.
Oh, great. Even.
Woo, just that.
Okay, let's see. You know, I'm only 25, so the career hasn't been that long. But I would say the rose thus far has been founding my own theater company. You know, at the age of 22, starting a professional theater company in my hometown, it was literally a dream. And, you know, being in this town where when I was growing up, there was really no theater that I knew of. And I imagined myself being like 8, 9 years old. If I would have had that option, I'd have no idea where my life would be now, because I know I would have loved it and done it. So to be able to do that at the age of 22 and build this company with the incredible people I work with, like John, Steven played Chip Tolentino in our very first production in Putnam County. We've worked with some incredible artists. You know, we're going on year 3. And that brings us to the thorn, right? you know, being a brand new professional theater company at year 3 when a pandemic hits is no fun. You know, and literally my thorn is going to happen in about an hour and a half when I have a staff meeting that talks about the future of our company. You know, probably we're probably not having a season this year. And, you know, it's like 90% sure we're not going to have a company anymore. Because it's just how do you, you can't get past it, you know? So literally seeing your dream crash is a little bit of a thorn. yeah, so, and it just sucks. Because, you, I mean, and everybody's in the same boat, you know? And I think who would have known 3 years ago when we started a company, what would have taken us out is a pandemic. so I think that's kind of where like the bud comes in, right? Because it's not like we failed as producers. literally out of our hands, but I've learned so much about the business and about myself, and that there's literally nothing, there's no such thing as an impossible dream, because we've created this and it was possible. Mm-hmm. We had so many people tell us when we started, it's impossible. We had people mad at us because we were starting a competing theater company, you know, like all of these things that happened in a small Midwestern town, but we did it. And I know it's possible again. So yeah. And just the amount of artists I've gotten to work with is incredible. And the amount of work we got to do is incredible. So I mourn it for a minute, but then we move on and keep creating good work.
I just got to speak to it. I was lucky enough to be there for your last two seasons, and it was some of my favorite theater experiences that I've ever had.
See, now I'm going to cry.
Okay. Heidi, let's have you go next.
Oh, gosh. Well, what's so interesting is that I'm going to start with The Thorn, because I don't want to say that I don't have any, because that sounds like a bunch of crap. But everything that has been a thorn, that has been crap, I have tried and I think succeeded in turning it into a positive and a learning experience. It's funny. I feel like we, even though there's so many differences in all of us here on this podcast, there are a lot of similarities. My dad, long story short, he's celebrating his 19th year as a Catholic priest tomorrow. So I also grew up in the church. It's important to me to find the positive in the dark. So the thorns, there are many, but I feel like I've been able to take all of them and turn them into something. The rose, oh God, there's so many. And I want to say, as far as like, we're talking about my career, yes? The rose is the people. Mm-hmm. It is the community of people. And when I say community, I'm talking about my Chicago theater community, my New York theater community, because I have so many dear friends who live in New York. Kayla, you and I probably have minimally 100 mutual friends that you've been in. The community of young people that I have met, the community of people who are older than me, the enrichment of my life as a performer and what I've learned as a performer from them, but also of how I want to live my life, of how I want to radiate as much light as I possibly can. That for me has been the rose, is just the people that are my colleagues and my family and my friend and my chosen family and my actual family. And the bud is actually things like this. When I get to, because I'm not an old lady. when I get to meet young artists, and I am reminded of that part of me that sometimes can get covered up a little bit by all of the years of the business and the work and all of the things that you have to go through. And in particular now during a pandemic and everything that is going on in our world, the things that can get me down about that, about what we do, and oh my God, the bud of the young people and of the hope, as you were saying, Alex, here we are on this precipice. We have had to shut down our livelihood. When can we get back to it? Who knows? My hope is that bud, that there are so many things that we need to learn to do better in the theater. Inclusion, acceptance, safe and sanitary. I mean, you know, all of these things that like, okay, we're in a pandemic. Maybe we're going to figure out that cleaning a theater backstage is as important as cleaning the front of house, you know, things like that, that all we are, it is a crappy time. So here we are. I got to look at it as a gift because I have no choice. So what is this gift? It's a reset button, and we have the opportunity to take this crap and turn it into hopefully something that this amazing art form that we all get to be lucky enough to be a part of, that we can make it what it should be and that it hasn't been able to be for so many reasons that we are given a reset button. That's my bud.
Thank you.
Yep. No, I'm crying. We're all crying.
Lying awake and crying. We're changing the title of our podcast.
Crying awake.
Crying awake. A theater podcast.
All right, Kayla, what about you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just like, what do you add to that? Like, because that really is what it is. I think, like, the thorn in a way for me could be that I am not performing on a stage right now, and not doing the thing that I am so passionate in doing, and not reaching lives through live theater. But also within that, the roles is this reset button. I'm so thankful for this time off in my career because it gives you a new perspective. Like, there are new ways to learn about how to live life and how that transcends into theater. It's new ways to find new artistic value in your life. It's like the chance for you to like take a seat and like just breathe. And I think that especially living in New York, everything is so fast paced, and I'm a fast paced kind of gal, so it's my speed, but then I forget it. I start to make other things priorities. And so within this reset button in my career, I get to redefine what these priorities are for me. And the kind of future I want to build for myself. And I get to finally start listing out the plans, and listing out the goals that I want to reach. And I'm just like, it's brightening my day up more than I could have ever asked for. I'm like, thank you for this time where I get to be like, Kayla, you know, and have self-reflection in what I'm doing. I'm just like, I'm reaching new heights with my voice right now from this vocal rest. I'm like, honestly, because I'm hitting notes I did not know I could hit. So, like, you know, but it's this newfound journey of just, like, the newness of it all. What's the newness that you bring into this world and your art?
Yeah.
And I'm so thankful for that. And, yeah, the bud is things like this. I think a lot of the time I get very much, like, I'm like, I just want to sleep. I don't really want to do any workshops or any classes. And then when I do them, I'm like, oh, thank you for asking me to do this. Like, this touched me more than you know. You know, you leave changed. And that's what this art is all about. Every time you leave changed. And I'm just like, that is my bud. I want that to be the hope of the future, to continue the art so I can leave changed as my dog runs in here and wife.
Just
living. Yes. And people like him. So, but yeah, that's the bud. You cannot breathe like that, sir. They're gonna hear you.
But
yeah, it's the bud of like the hope for the future and never entering in it the same way that you came.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. That's that.
All right, Mr. Steven, go for it.
I would say that my rose would be, I'm at a place now where I am very, I'm very optimistic for what's to come. And I think, I have to also say, like, moments like these are moments of reassurance for me, to let me know that there are definitely, like I said, people there that of course see something within you, which is why you guys contacted me. That's what I would consider to be the rose. The thorn, would be, I would say my own personal thoughts, my own personal insecurities, and my own personal things that are keeping me from auditioning or that are keeping me from going after a certain dream or a certain thing. Even moving, like, that was a big thing for me. Like, do I leave? Do I stay? What am I supposed to do? Like, I don't know exactly where I'm supposed to be. Should I move to New York? Should I move to Florida? Should I go to Chicago? Like, where am I supposed to go? Mm-hmm. So I think that's the biggest thing for me when it comes to the thorn, because like I said, you know that there's a gift, or you know that you're supposed to be doing something, but when it comes to direction, you don't know exactly what it is that, you don't know where exactly you're supposed to be swayed. So I think that's for me the uncertainty. That would be my thorn. Mm-hmm. But the bud would have to be the optimism and the hope that there is opportunity anywhere I may place my foot. So like anywhere I go, and I feel as if in regards to my life and what Kayla said, it would hit me so hard in my chest, is because I want to say for me, all of my steps are intentional. All of my steps have been purposeful. Like I've never gone anywhere when it comes to shows that I've been in, when it comes to me moving somewhere. Every place that I've went has been for a reason. I met somebody that has pushed me towards my me getting closer to my dreams. Or I've been in a show that taught me the importance of being professional, coming to work on time, whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. So I think that is the bud for me, is just knowing that like there is opportunity everywhere, and knowing that every place that I go is setting me up for like something bigger and something better. So, that's what I got for you.
I just want to say that it takes a tremendous amount of bravery to move across the country. And I just think that should be said. I think no matter where you might have moved, you took a huge step that I have many very friends who I love very dearly who will not do it. They won't. And they're on their journey and they'll find their way. But I just want to speak mad respect for the fact that you had the bravery.
Yeah, my next stop, because it was honestly going to be New York, but I was just so scared and I was nervous. And when I had the opportunity while I was at Kennedy Center, the KCACTF, I went to the Next Step auditions, which is an opportunity for juniors and seniors to find work from agencies. And there were 10. There were 10 different agencies, and I got a call back from Main Stage in Milwaukee, and the guy, he asked me, the stage manager, well, not the stage manager, the artistic director, he was like, why aren't you in New York, or why aren't you in Chicago? Like, you're ready. And I'm like, what? Like, I don't hear that. He was just like, you're ready. He was like, I was looking for a female, and I was looking for a male that I want for our possibles for our next upcoming season. And he was like, I found the girl and I was looking for the guy. And he was like, as soon as you walked in and you sang Words Fail, you were the best that I've heard, like, period. And I was like, oh my God. He was like, you need to be out there and you need to get out there and you need to go. So I think that was the biggest thing that like that sparked, okay, well, I probably need to get out of here. But I didn't know exactly where to go. So, you know, Disney was the contributing factor, of course, with me going into entertainment for the college program. But now that that's not happening, I'm like, okay, God, what am I supposed to be doing? Why am I here? So, you know, it's unfolding.
Nice. Thank you, Stephen.
The final organization we'd like to highlight is Black Lives Matter, a global organization based in the US, UK, and Canada, whose mission is to eradicate white supremacy and build local power to intervene in violence inflicted on black communities by the state and vigilantes.
You can donate and learn more at blacklivesmatter.com and on Instagram at the handle BLKLivesMatter. Heidi, Kayla, and Stephen, we cannot thank you enough for being so generous with your time and your thoughts today. It means so much to us that you were here on our show. And I will probably never be able to get John to shut up about this episode ever again.
It has been an honor and a privilege. Thank you for asking.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
So before we sign off, Stephen, where can people connect with you? Are there any projects you want to plug or anything else you want to say?
Yes. So I have 16 individuals. It's 8 girls and 8 guys. We are actually in the works of releasing, which was so weird because Hamilton is getting ready to be broadcast on a Disney Plus. And mm-hmm. So I came up with the idea, why not do a virtual recording of Alexander Hamilton? And I found 16 people. They're from all over the United States, some in New York, some in Illinois, some in Indiana, some in Florida. And we are releasing a virtual video of Alexander Hamilton as a tribute to the releasing on Disney Plus. And so the flyer will be coming out immediately, but just for like promotional reasons and whatnot, and you might see some of your friends, and yeah, so that will be coming out within the first or second week of June. And then other than that, I'm not really working on anything. I'm just perfecting my craft currently as I stay quarantined.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Where can people find the video when it comes out, and where can they connect with you personally?
Oh, so the video will be streamed on my page. And then I don't know how we're going to do it for Instagram. I think we're going to do it for my page as well, but we'll see about that. We might just create a completely different page for that. However, you can find everything on my Facebook page and my Instagram. Both are under Stephen White. So you can find me at Stephen with a PH, not with the V, and White like the color. So, yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. How about you, Kayla? Where can people connect with you? Anything you want to plug or anything you want to say?
I don't got no plugs right now. I'm just chilling in my bathroom. and also, I feel like they happen so randomly. So just follow me on Instagram and Facebook under Kayla Davion. You gonna see it. I will post about it. yeah, follow me for some cool content. I like to post about a lot of different things. And I love to post quotes. So follow me and message me if you need me.
Heidi, where can people connect with you? Do you have anything you want to plug? Any final thoughts?
Sure, I guess. I mean, I'm on the Facebooks. Heidi Kettenring on Facebook. My Instagram, please don't ask me where it came from, is Pahada.
I was gonna ask you.
Oh, it's Sean Allen Krill is one of my very best friends, and when we met, there's a whole thing about our names, but he's I thought his name was Pashawn for some reason. I said, oh, you're Pashawn, nice to meet you. He's like, no, my name is Sean, but you know, there was a joke about, is there a silent P before your name? So he started calling me Pahidi, which turned into Pahada, which is now, so it's Pahada with an H at the end. Actually, this is sort of a cool thing. There's a gentleman in Chicago named David Fiorello who has started a wonderful organization called the Beautiful City Project. And what they do is he had, before the quarantine happened, once a month, he was asking friends of his in the theater community to volunteer their time. And we were doing concerts at various venues and raising money for a different not-for-profit every time. So like the first one was for Anti-Cruelty Society. The second one was for a shelter in Chicago that helps battered women. Well, he has been trying to find ways to continue to do this during quarantine. So he has a thing that it actually started yesterday. We took today off because of everybody took today off for Tuesday. But it's called 100 Days. It's 100 days, and each day a different performer is singing what he considers to be the 100 greatest music theater songs. And I think I'm number 93. I'm singing a song that was actually cut from Wonderful Town, so I'm fascinated that he thinks it's one of the greatest because it was cut, but I love it, so I'm thrilled. So that'll be whenever that is, like 8 days from now. And then, you know, I had a bunch of stuff that is postponed. I'm supposed to be in As You Like It at Chicago Shakespeare Theater as Phoebe. That was supposed to start rehearsal mid-March. So currently it has not been canceled. It is just at some point, hopefully Chicago Shakespeare Theater will do As You Like It and I will be in it. It is a Beatles, like Beatles music and 60s inspired As You Like It. And then I have this Karen Carpenter concert that you were talking about with Artist Lounge Live, and I've got like 15 of them scheduled in December, and wow, none of them have been canceled yet. So, you know, hopefully in particular, because it's just a singer and six musicians that sure, as people slowly get back into, you know, the theaters won't lose a ton of money if they do it. We can be socially distant on stage and do it. So hopefully those will happen. It's called Merry Christmas, Darling.
Gotcha.
And it's half and sort of half and half Carpenter's Christmas music and their regular catalog. And the band is fantastic. And I love doing it and really hope that they happen because they bring me joy and it seems that the audience really loves them. So, and they're all over the country too. Like some are in Houston, some are at the Goodspeed, some are at the Marriott here. So hopefully they'll all happen.
Yes. We'll keep our fingers crossed for you.
Yeah. Thanks.
Oh, come through, Karen.
Come through, Karen.
Well, my brain is absolutely full, and my heart is full, and my spirit is full, and I just feel so in love with theater right now. How are you feeling?
Ditto.
Thank you, Alex.
I'm a man of many words. So what are we going to do next episode?
Next episode, we are going to be, we're going to be talking about directors. We're going to be continuing this, what do we call this? It's a series?
Series, yeah.
We're going to be continuing this series of asking the question, who makes theater? And for each episode in the series, we're going to try to hear from a different vantage point of the theater making process. So today was actors. Next time we're going to be talking directors. We're going to reach out to some more very special guests, and it's going to be a fantastic episode.
If you're a Broadway director and you're listening, hit us up. We'd love to have you on.
Or not even a Broadway director. We want you from all over, and we want to hear about the work that you love to do.
I'm Alex Price.
And I'm John Arlen Baines.
You can find us on Facebook at Lying Awake, a theater podcast.
And on Instagram at lyingawake.podcast.
Thanks for nerding out with us on all things theater.
We'll be here next time you find yourself lying awake.